Welcome to Courage in Action. We are a sisterhood of women empowering women to be everything we are meant to be. I'm your host, Niluka Kotagara, and it is my privilege to join your life journey as we connect with some extraordinary, triumphant, and beautifully imperfect women through this podcast. Together, we hope to inspire you to take action towards your life goals, one courageous step at a time. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back. Today we are joined by Gina Hatzis, a global award-winning speaker and educator who passionately champions women to celebrate their, quote, too muchness and confidently live a regret-free life. Welcome, Gina.
Hey, hello, everyone.
We are thrilled to have you here, and I just wanted to start off by having you explain what too much woman actually means and how you reach the point where you embrace being too much woman.
That's my favorite question. So,
oh, good.
Where do we begin? So I was born a too much little girl. I think a lot of people will identify once I unpack what that is. And what that meant was, as a little girl, I was told either by word or by deed that there was something wrong with me. I was a very sensitive child. I was told I was too emotional, too sensitive, too dramatic. I was the kind of kid that would get lost in the clouds, or I would cry if an ant got squished. As I got older into my teens, there were other things. You know, I was raised by a single mom for a long time, and she had to go back to work, and she was always leaving. She was going to college. She was trying to better herself at night. And I just remember her leaving a lot and me being upset a lot about that. And my brother, I have an older brother. He was cool. He's like, my mom playing with his trucks. And I was like, don't. And so I kind of got this, this identifier, this marker as being too much. I was, you know, they were always trying to protect me. And so as I got older, it expressed itself in different ways. I was too voluptuous. I was too loud. As a kid who didn't have a protector, I became a very mama bear energy around the underdogs. I got beat up in high school because of I was protecting other kids who were being bullied. And so I was too loud. I was too aggressive. I was too opinionated. I was too ambitious. And as I began my speaking career, I started off in journalism at CP24, and then I moved into a speaking career. And in a speaking career that was dominated by white middle-class males, I was, you know, too feminine, I was too sexy, I was assaulted. So the too much woman legacy has followed me my whole life. Yeah. And it's not to say that at some point I was like, oh, enough. Throughout my life, I have oscillated between showing up in my too muchness because it's who I am, and then shrinking because of the repercussions of being. And so my story is about the oscillation of hiding and shrinking and coming out and shrinking. And I talk to a lot of women who experience that. Like, we kind of were like, no, that's enough. I'm going to stand up for myself, or I'm going to be who I am. And then there's a repercussion or a backlash, and then they shrink again. And so that's the story of the too much woman.
Well, how do you manage that? Because that, I think, is the story, as I'm sure you've experienced for most women who are out there, that oscillation, as you called it, we might try to be bold and try to do something, and you always get criticized. No matter what you're doing, you're going to get criticized, and we have a tendency to shrink, as you said. So how do you manage that and not give in to those temptations to kind of make yourself smaller in a room?
This is the work of my life. It is literally give women the practical tools that we can use. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So the first knee-jerk response that I have to really start, it's really the heart of my work, is understanding self-trust, is really understanding. We are, as women, we are groomed, we are raised, we are socialized to not trust ourselves. So it really starts there. So it starts as little girls where we can't trust what we wear, right? Cover yourself up. We can't trust our intuition. We can't trust our emotions. You know, don't cry. Don't be a girl. We can't trust our intelligence. You know, dim it down. Boys don't like smart girls, or like we can't trust ourselves. And so mama knows best. Dad knows best. Teacher knows best. Doctor knows best. Men know best. They mansplain over time. So we get to a point where we don't even trust ourselves. We are on this hamster wheel of analysis paralysis where we don't even know what we like. We don't know what we want. We don't know what we desire. We don't allow ourselves to want anything because we take care of everyone else. So where I begin with all women is to come back to ourselves and really get rooted in what I call self-trust. And that is the foundation of everything.
And what's the foundation of getting to a point of self-trust?
So first step is understanding what it is. So a lot of people think self-trust is I trust myself to do something. So for example, I trust myself to put myself out there, maybe create content on social media. I trust myself to speak up at a meeting with my boss when normally I wouldn't. I trust myself in this relationship to ask for my needs to be met. That's what we think self-trust is, but that's not actually self-trust. Self-trust isn't about trying something and succeeding. Self-trust is the assured reliance that I'm going to do this thing that feels right and true for me. And no matter the outcome, no matter the response, I will do right by me. I've got my own back. I will take care of me. So for example, if I'm going to speak up in relationship, and not have any reciprocation or not get the response or the action that I need, then that's okay. Self-trust is saying, well, I will do right by me and I will make decisions based on that. So it's always about coming back to knowing that I can trust myself. I can trust myself in a relationship to have a boundary, to uphold the boundary and the consequences of those boundaries, and to walk if I need to. And this really, I can give you a million examples, but self-trust is really knowing no matter what, I've got my own back. And that's where women really need to start.
Yeah. I was just smiling, and our listeners can't see me smiling, but I'm smiling as you're describing that, because a lot of our listeners and ourselves have been through different traumas at different stages in life, whether it be in personal relationships or in career or in all of those things. And I was smiling because I was thinking to myself, wouldn't that be amazing to be able to just trust that no matter what happened, we had our own back, then that would be a very powerful position for us as women to be in.
It's the root system. And so I want to add a caveat to that, because I feel what happened to me and what I see with a lot of my clients and people that I work with and women at large and in society is that we intellectually get that. So what we do, what I did is I swung from this, what I might call codependent or needy, what I thought was too needy person, woman, and I swung the pendulum all the way to the other side to become an uber independent adult. So I felt like the antidote to that was to become strong, powerful, independent, self-sufficient, not need anybody. I've got my own back. Put all the walls up.
All the
Thank
walls.
You very much. Yeah. Everybody stands out here. And I'll tell you, it works for a while. It works for a while because
not sustainable,
everybody's
at bay
and you're like, okay, nobody can come in and hurt me. But what we also know as women is that's not how we function best. That's not how we flourish. We need community. So I always say I liken it, because I'm a visual person, to a flower. Like the root is your self-trust. It really you need a strong root system. But in order to flourish, in order to flower, women need community. So the difference, though, is that we can't start with the other. We can't start with, what do you think, girl, what should I do? You know, listen to what he did to me. Like, we can't start there. We have to have a strong root system. And from that place, we curate and cultivate a community of women and men, but like a community of women who can really hold us in that, because uber independence is also toxic, right? Like that is... And how many of us are burnt out, stressed out, strung out, lonely, afraid, can't talk to anybody? And anybody who's in the business or entrepreneurial space as a woman will tell you it is lonely. It's lonely if you leave a relationship. It's lonely when you get a divorce and you lose all of those contacts. It's lonely losing friends at middle age. And so the caveat is, yes, self-trust first, and community is just as important.
And how you structure or compose that community is really important. Community doesn't mean that it's a million people. And you just have to gather as many people as you want and say it's your community. That's not it. Yep. They should be very special and select people that are your true community and your true support system.
Yeah. I always say I'd rather have four quarters than 100 pennies. I have four people in my life, and they are my pillars. Yeah. And these four women are so different. I've never put them in the same room together because I don't think they would
probably
vibe,
wouldn't get along.
They're different. Like one of my pillars is a businesswoman. She's an entrepreneur like me. She runs a movement like me. She understands that space. She understands the struggle of being a powerful, successful woman and what that entails and, you know, the pressure. I have another pillar who's been she's known me since I was a kid. She keeps me grounded. She saw me buck toothed and ponytailed and, you know, she knows me. Like, she's like, girl, she can call me out. I have another one who's more of a spiritual mentor. She's a couple years older than me. She just sees me in a different, kinder, softer kind of way. So I have different people who are integral, and I focus on and nourish those relationships. And I think you don't need four people. Sometimes it starts with one, but definitely as women, we do need people. And to be very honest, those pillars have moved around, some of them, and I've had to drop some off and build some others up. It's an ongoing process. It's an ongoing process. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned one of them is your girlfriend from the beginning of time, our time anyway. Yeah. The others, how did they come into your life, and do people ebb and flow, and how do you manage that when your community is disrupted?
This is a whole podcast in and of itself. Just recently, in the past year, I had two friendship fallouts and it was crushing. It's crushing at any age. Yeah. Certainly crushing at middle age for me, because you kind of feel at this point, like you would know, like you should
feel
know.
Like you're set.
It was really a process for me of recognizing, you know, as the cliche saying goes, a reason, a season, a lifetime, that not everybody is here to stay. And so for me, one of the other tools that I teach women that is so pivotal, it's simple, but it's the most pivotal work that I start with, is understanding your true core values. So I'm going to kind of go on a veer off, but I'm going to come
You're
back.
Fine.
There's a reason I want to talk about this, because when I ask a woman, when I was on tour across the world, I would say to women, what's most important to you? What are your core values? And just, there's a knee-jerk response. They're like, family, health, love, being a good person.
The answers you're supposed to give as a woman.
But here's the thing. We are taught that those are the things that need to be important. And maybe they are important to you, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the core values that steer the ship of your soul. And
your
when I actually
unique
sit down
soul.
And that's right.
Yeah.
Because the problem is, for about 35 years, I lived by those values. I was raised in a family culturally where family's number one. You don't move across the world. You don't go chase your dreams. The family unit is it.
Top
I was
priority
also raised in a family,
over everything. Yeah.
Yeah, over everything. I was also raised in a family where you make careful, safe choices. So financially, you don't take risks. Nobody's an entrepreneur in my family. off like your mortgage, you don't spend money on thing, like, and so I live my whole life that way. I married someone that fit that. I created a life that fit that context, and I was like, why am I so unhappy when I have all the things? And it's because, yes, I do value family and I do value safety in terms of choices, but you know what I value more? I value courage. I value freedom. I value safety, self-expression, just that little bit more. It doesn't mean I don't love and value my family and my kids, but for me, not living a fully courageous, self-expressed life is like dying. It's like suffocating underwater. So when I learned that for myself, I was like, hold up. I started making different choices based on that. And my life changed completely. So back to your question about the friends, this is a really important revelation, because our friendships need to be aligned. It doesn't mean they have to have the same core values, but if they don't align, at least in the same direction, you will and should grow apart. And so that's been super helpful for me.
Yeah. And it I think you have to grieve friendships the same way you grieve a relationship or just grieve anything, to be honest. It's not an easy thing to navigate. And that's where I think the concept of your chosen family comes into play. So we were talking a lot about family and women must value family, but it doesn't have to be go get married and have children. There's your family. There are so many definitions of family. So it's almost when I think about community and what we were talking about, I think about chosen family.
Yes.
And navigating that can be very challenging.
Yeah, it sure can. And I think what helps is to create the framework for yourself, because it's not just let me go out there and let me just meet some women. We want to be really intentional with the spaces that we enter into and the intention that we have. And it makes it so much easier because I can meet a whole bunch of people and just be very clear right off the bat. Oh, you're my people. You vibe with me. And we're intuitive and we sense that and we know. But if you're walking into a space where you don't have any parameters, it just makes it a much harder process.
So you've talked about that. You're talking about trusting your gut. What do you do to manage that if you feel like your gut has led you astray in the past?
Oh, that's such a good question. So when we feel like we've made decisions or we've made choices that weren't in alignment or supportive of us, what starts to happen is we start to question everything, right? So I picked this partner. It didn't work out well. How can I ever trust myself again? And so we start to like self-admonish and we second guess everything about ourselves. The way I feel is best to navigate that, and this again goes back to my experience talking to women across the world, is what we've done in terms of moving away from our knowing, our deep intuition, is we've really started to live a neck up existence. We've really started to get into our head. So because there's so much information out there, I call it shelf help. Like we read so many books and there's all these incredible like podcasts. There's like information coming everywhere. And that is really a neck up understanding. So what we do is we listen to other people tell us what we think we should think. And then we make decisions from that place and we call it our gut. My sense is, I always say it's because it happened to me. And then I talk to other women, they're like, oh my God, you're right. I was living a neck up existence. I was intellectualizing everything, calling it my gut feeling. And it was not. And the reason I know is that when you have spent your life not trusting yourself, let's go back to the root system. You don't trust yourself. What you do is you start to shut off the uncomfortable feelings. You start to shut off the little feeling in your gut that that man isn't safe or that situation isn't ideal or that vibe is up. You start to shut it down. And when we start to shut down access to our body and our feelings, then we start to shut off access to our intuition. So when women say to me, I can't trust myself because I made bad decisions in the past, where we start to go to start to heal that is recognizing that those decisions were often not made from a deep rooted sense of self. Mm-hmm. They were made in response to a whole bunch of other big T or little T traumas, circumstances, fears. And when we start to come back to ourselves and really build that muscle of self-trust, that's where we can start to trust ourselves again.
I love that. And as you're building that muscle of self-trust, how do you, especially as women, prevent yourself and stop yourself from doing things that are rooted in being a people pleaser?
That's a big one. Yeah. So understanding what people pleasing is really about is a great place to start. I'll start with me. I myself believe being a people pleaser came from me just wanting to be kind and nice and thoughtful, like me wanting to be a good person. And I stood by that for most of my life. I'm like, I'm just a good person. I just care. Yes. But once I did a little bit of digging, I'm like, okay, maybe there's something else here. And I recognize that people pleasing is a way that I learned to override my needs, my voice, my desire in order to keep peace in order to get love. So for example, and I always throw my mother under the bus. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Poor,
but
you poor
know,
mom.
when I was younger and, you know, she would be trying to get to work or trying to get to night school or whatever she was doing, and I would cry. What I learned is she would show affection and love to my brother because he would be kind of cool with her leaving. But with me, she started to get frustrated and angry. Sometimes she didn't know what to do with me. Sometimes she'd yell and say, I'm coming back. And sometimes she would sneak out the door and leave me with a babysitter. So what I started to learn was, oh, this behavior is not going to get me the love that I want. So I need to swallow how I'm feeling. And I need to act all happy and okay, bye, mommy, even though I was crushed inside, in order to get the love that I want. So we're so smart. We're so smart as kids.
Yes.
So I learned over time, I can walk into a room, sense how everyone's doing, lay down my needs, my wants, my desires, and be like, okay, who needs me? Who needs what? And so because we do that as women, what we're trying to actually do is not keep the peace for everyone. That's not really it. What we're trying to do is ensure love and belonging for ourselves.
Yeah.
So when we understand
safety mechanism that, for us,
that's right. And when we understand that, then we can start to navigate people pleasing in a different way. I can start to ask myself, you know, when my mother, who I have a wonderful relationship with, is a very strong-willed person. That's where I get it. And I love her for that. But if she calls and I share something with her and I can just hear on the phone her tone change, I could just see she's like disapproving a little bit in that moment. Normally what I would do is I would try to cover it up and fix it and over explain and water it down. But what I'm learning to do, because I understand that my fear is that it's going to take like that love away from me, her disapproving, you know, feeling is scary to me, I have to ask myself, what do I need right now? I need reassurance. I need to feel like I'm okay. I need to, so I can in that moment create a pattern interrupt and go give me or ask one of my pillars to give me some of what I need. And that's where the awareness and the tool comes in. I'm like, ooh, what do I need right now? I need some reassurance that I've got me. I know me. I know what's best for me. And I need a little bit of loving and belonging. And maybe that is something I can give to myself. Or maybe that's something I can ask someone to support me in.
So interrupting your pattern. So self-trust is, I guess, part of it is the ability to see like, uh-oh, I'm doing it again. You know,
just you do it.
Understanding that and being able to pause in the middle of it, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing. So much of the personal development and self-help movement, and I've been part of it for 30 years, so I can wrap myself out. So much of it has been about trying to change a part of ourselves that we think is wrong. It's like, oh, there I go again. I always do that. I self-sabotage. I have imposter syndrome. Like all of these things that we do. And I want to just stop right there. Let's just stop right there and redefine a pattern interrupt. So when I'm working with clients, I always say, like, when you catch yourself in something, you're like, oh, there I go again. Like I was on the phone with my mom and I did that thing again. I want to invite us to look at that lovingly, playfully, kind of be like, girl, you know, I teach a technique where we understand there's a part of me. There's little Gina and she's 5 years old. And I actually have a picture of her. She's got uneven bangs and crooked pigtails.
So cute.
Super cute. I mean, she's super cute, but every morning I have a practice where I spend 5 minutes just sitting with her. And as wild as that sounds, what that does every day for me is it reminds me, I can't have compassion for me. I'm 48 years old. It's very hard for me to look in the mirror and be compassionate towards myself. Because I look in the mirror and I'm like, you know better, girl. Like you are old enough. You know better. Like, what are you doing?
Pull yourself together.
Why are you calling him back? Why are you not going for a walk? Why did you eat that burger? Whatever.
Right.
But if I start my day and I build a relationship with five-year-old Gina who would hide under the table with her blanket when her mom went to work, five-year-old Gina who was crying at her birthday party because there was so much tension and pressure in the room that she just didn't know how to be and everybody made fun of her. When I can connect with her, that she is still part of me. She's the one who is people-pleasing. She's the one who's scared to show up fully in life. She's the one. And so I've found ways to reconnect with that part. So it's soft. I guess what I'm saying here is when we get to that place and we're creating a pattern interrupt, the last thing we want to do is to be hard on ourselves. The last thing we want to do is be self-critical. The last thing we want to do is be like, girl, I can't believe. And I think that's the biggest thing that we've been misled about, is that we have to be hard on ourselves. Yes. And I'm inviting us, because that creates fragmentation. It splits us, right? Mm-hmm. And we have lots of fragments. So the better thing to do is to pull her closer, pull that part of you close. And we can talk about that, but that's the new way, the new, more loving way.
I love that, because when has yelling or being super harsh with anybody ever worked in any kind of meaningful way? And I absolutely love the idea of having an actual photograph, if you have them, of yourself when you were a child, because it's hard to just close your eyes and picture her, but that inner child is always there. For me, I think I'm about 8. I think I want to go in search of a photo now. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful routine to just spend time with that little girl in the morning.
I will tell you that that practice saved my life. And I don't mean to be dramatic about it. During the pandemic, I ended a 25-year marriage. My business, which is speaking, I was in Europe on tour. The whole thing was wiped out. Just everything in my health, everything. And that practice single-handedly changed my life. And I didn't know it was going to do that. But what I did know was that I couldn't find a place within myself where I was okay. So what I did, and I'm just going to flush this out, because if there's anybody listening, my clients get so much value from this as well. So I get a picture of yourself. It doesn't have to be a little baby, whatever picture of yourself. I needed the visual of her. Because like you said, I'm a visual person. I needed that visual. But what I did, and why this technique was so helpful, is I coupled it, first of all, with another habit. So every morning I get out of bed and I bolt for the coffee maker. Like, that's my morning. Like, nothing else happens before my coffee. So while my coffee was being made, I had a specific corner of my house with a zebra blanket. And I only use the zebra printed blanket for this practice. I would light a candle. I would get my little picture. I'd wrap myself in the zebra blanket and I would get my coffee. And the reason I mention all of these things is what I did unknowingly was I created a little 5-minute ritual. And I highly recommend, don't make it 20. Don't make it 40. Make it like no more than 5, because then we
don't overcomplicate it.
It feels like it's pressure, but the smell of the coffee, the lit candle, the warmth of the zebra blanket, the sitting in that one particular place. I didn't sit there. It's not in my bed. It's not where I do my work. It's not where I watch TV. I just picked this little corner of the room, sat on the floor. And every day that was just my 5 minutes with me. Mm-hmm. But I made it such a habit, and there's no goal. Like, you're not there to talk to her unless you want, like, there's no journaling. There's no meditating. It's just, it sent a message to my unconscious that I was worth the 5 minutes of presence. It just started over time. Like, I was worth, because what that 5-year-old girl wanted, and I'm going to get emotional, but like what that 5-year-old girl wanted was just my mom to sit with me, just to be. So I am providing that safety and that presence for me, and it healed me. And I don't do it every day, but I still come back to it when I feel thrown.
Thank you for sharing that, because it's so profound and so simple. And I love that you said don't go more than 5 minutes, because everyone will be like, I have such a busy life, how am I supposed to light a candle and do all of these things? I can't. But the thing that resonated the most with me, and I think with our listeners as well, was that you said you want her to get the message that she's worth it, which means that you're worth it. And that is something that is very difficult for us to comprehend on our own sometimes. So thank you for sharing that.
Pleasure.
So we're talking about self-trust and the root and building the right community, being able to reach out to them at the right time. How do you grow and flourish? What's the rest of the flower that you talk about?
I think the most important thing I want to say about growing and flourishing is that we can't grow and flourish and be creative and pursue anything that we desire if we're in a state of fight or flight. We can't do it if we are in a state of survival. We can't do it if we don't feel safe in some capacity. We can't do it. You know, the part of our brain, the amygdala, that's there, that is lit up, trying to keep us in survival mode, is very on point. I mean, your brain just wants to keep you safe and have you survive. So growing and flourishing isn't about survival. Growing and flourishing is the capacity, once we feel safe, to be in our frontal lobe, the creative, imaginative part, the playful part of ourselves, and to draw inspiration from there. So what I hear a lot from women is they have desire, they want to do something, but they're stuck. And they're like, I'm so stuck. There's so much procrastination. There's so much resistance. Like, I want to do this thing. Or maybe like I join the gym, or I start eating healthy, or I start meditating, whatever it is, whatever their desire is. And then they can't sustain it. And there's so much resistance. They think, like, we're taught, just push through, like push through, just do the thing. But you know, inspiration is fleeting. That's not what sustains anything. And so what we really have to look at is, how do we calm our nervous system in the moment, so that we can actually tame the part of our brain that is trying to keep us safe? It's like looking for like the tiger that's going to jump out at us, so that we can access the flourishing part, which is a completely different energy, if that makes sense. And that's why sometimes we could be in the shower, or we can be out for a walk, and we get like sources of inspiration doing seemingly nothing things, but that's because our nervous system is calm. But if you sit down and you try to do something, like when you're focused and you're afraid, like you're trying really hard to do something, it's hard because a lot of the fear is right in your face.
And I think that's an important distinction, is when you're trying really hard, like you feel like you're forcing something, as opposed to you feel like you're flowing with something.
That's right.
But when you're in a flow, because life is not like, oh, I've reached a flow state and now I'm going to flow for the rest of my life. It just doesn't work like that. So we will always hit things that are like, if you think of a river flowing, there are going to be rocks and trees falling and barriers and triggers that are going to throw you off that flow and that rhythm. Recognizing it, I think, is important, but sometimes it's very difficult to sort of bring yourself back to that calm space. And it's not like the same thing is going to work for everyone, but how do you approach that in your life when you feel like you're thrown off?
Yeah, that's where my pillars come in. That's where my community comes in, because here's the thing. You're right. You're absolutely right. People reach out to me all the time on social media. They're like, how do I get to that place that you're at? Like, how do I get? And I was like, there's no finish line. Like,
I don't live here every day.
Like, I don't live here every day. There's not a switch that you flip and you're on the other side. And so the more I normalize, try to normalize that, first of all, try to normalize life ebbs and flows, right? It's just like the water ebbs and flows. So first understanding that that's life. There's no other side that we get to. But when all of us, our humanness prevails. And when I have days, and I do, I have days where I wake up and I'm just like, what am I doing? And why am I doing? And who do I think I am? And why, like, all the stuff comes flooding. In those moments, I lean on my pillars. I'm like, I'm like ready to just stay under my sheets all day. And I don't feel like I can do this thing. This feels too big for me. This is too scary. And I have people who hold me and the highest version of me and hold that space for me. And that's why community is so important, because we all know we can get stuck in the scribble in our head. So community helps us to iron out. Now there's lots of strategies, but that's I think the most accessible one for a lot of us.
Yeah. And what I love about your community, and you mentioned it, is that each one of them holds the highest version of you, but different versions or different parts. So I've done a lot of part work in my life, and recognizing all of those parts, and one's not good or one's not bad. They're just different. And for me, I remember my therapist at the time telling me, like, this part that is in fear, it's trying, whatever that is that you feel like is blocking you or whatever, it's actually trying to protect you. So I spent time thanking that part. And that part is actually very important if I was actually in danger. So I started to picture it as a ship, and I'm like, go to the front, like the, I don't know what they're called, the women that were carved into the boats to keep them safe back in the day. Help me navigate it instead of blocking it.
Yes,
And
I love
it
that
might sound a
analogy.
little kooky, but that
No,
helped me in my mind.
I love that analogy. The way I describe it, and I'll use that. Thank you very much. I'm going to borrow that and quote you on that. But with the analogy that I often share with my clients is, I want you to imagine that you're at a boardroom table, a meeting, and all the parts of you, and in my language, I use like the too much parts, the one that's too afraid, too needy.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I'm going to use that.
too sensitive, too emotional. Here's the thing. They're all invited to the meeting. Like, I need them. The part
100%.
Of me that's too emotional, I put that in quotations, too emotional. The part of me that's emotional and sensitive makes me damn good at my work. I wouldn't trade that for anything. The part of me that's too needy is the part that knows I have needs. Like, who am I to not have my needs? The part of me that's afraid has kept me safe from a lot of danger and continues to keep me safe. So what I say is, they all come to the table. They're all invited to the boardroom meeting. But me, the part of me, the highest part of me that is crystal clear with my self-trust, I'm running the meeting. So what I do is I hold the microphone and I'm going to pass it around. I'm going to let everybody have their say because they, but I'm going to decide how long you speak. And at the end of the day, I'm going to make the decision in terms of what we're going to do in this particular direction, what action we're going to take and how we're going to feel. So I hold the mic, but everybody gets to come to the meeting. I need them there. We need them.
And everybody has equal value. So it's almost like you will be heard. Thank you. Now here's how I'm going to make my informed decision.
Exactly.
I think that's great.
It's a democracy.
It's a democracy within us. Democracy with a final decision maker.
The final decision maker for me is really the culmination of all of them. She's not separate.
And in it.
She's
in
the
it.
Whole. And if you look at the word integrity, a lot of people say, I want to be in integrity or live in integrity. The source of the word integrity, it means wholeness. So I think of all those parts as the fragmented parts of me, right? Like they're all these little, like parts work, all these little parts of me. And when you bring them together, that whole part of me, that's the one that makes a decision. So it's not like she's dominating. She's taken a collection of all the parts and making the highest, best decision based
for
on
everybody.
Everyone's.
I love that. Amazing. And if you could have one action or one thing that our listeners will take away from today, what would that be?
My mind goes in a million different directions because,
and that's fine.
because I have such a tender place in my heart for women and the way that we play small and the way that we dim ourselves and the way that we shrink and the way that we don't step into our worthiness. And by not stepping into our worthiness and into our gifts and into our strengths, we're actually holding back the world from progress and the gifts that only you can bring. So if anybody's listening to this, I want to lovingly nudge them into inviting with curiosity into their life, a space where they can just be a little bit bigger. Just take up a little bit more space. Maybe that's with your voice. Maybe that's telling the truth to a friend that about a secret that you've kept. Maybe that is being seen in a way that you've never been seen before because you love art, but you don't want anyone to see your art or to hear your singing voice or to know what your desires are. I mean, just that is a way that we can expand a little bit and take up more space. And so my invitation to anyone listening is to look at your life and ask yourself, where can I take up a little bit more space with my desire, with my gifts, with my strength, with my voice? That's what I think the world needs, all women to just take up a little bit more space.
I love it. That's beautiful. And to know that you can trust yourself and you're going to be okay taking up that space.
That's right. That's right.
Amazing. Well, thank you so very much for sharing everything today. I think our listeners will definitely benefit from you and can learn a lot more from you. So where can we find more information about you and the programs that you run?
You can find me on my website, ginahatzis.com. But the best place is really across all social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just enter my name or look for Gina or Too Much Woman, and you'll find me there. You'll find me
Amazing.
There.
Amazing. And we will add your website into the description of this podcast so that it's super easy for everybody.
What a
Amazing.
Pleasure. This was so
Thank
fun.
You. Same, same. I loved it. Thank you.
Courage in Action is dedicated to helping women move forward from difficult circumstances and create their best lives. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like, follow, and share it on Apple, Spotify, or Podbean. We appreciate your support and thank you for listening.